There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
All right, so the question of the hour is, did you miss me? Because if you didn't miss me, I'm going back, going on vacation again. I must admit, I felt as though Iran missed me. Had a launch in Israel. I did an experiment when I was there. Oh, by the way, thank you to all the people who wrote the kind words like, where are you? In emails and text messages. Like, aren't I ever entitled to just go away for a little while? I went to Puerto Rico. I spent 6 days on the beach, poolside, in the rainforest, with my two grandsons, Benjamin and Abraham. And I really was, I was so happy and so relaxed and so glad that the world held off until the weekend. So I didn't feel like I was missing covering some important stories. I wish I could not cover the story that is tops on the headline list, as it should be. I wish that the little experiment that I did didn't turn out the way it turned out. I decided, here I am, I'm not in Florida, where I pretty much know the temperature of any given room. I'm not even in, you know, on the mainland. Because I guess it's the same. In Hawaii, they call America the mainland, and in Puerto Rico, they call it the mainland. So I said, I'm just going to see what people's reaction is to this attack against Israel. 350 missiles, cruise missiles, and drones fired by one sovereign nation to another sovereign nation. Last time I checked, that's called a war. So I thought, well, certainly people can have some opinion about this. They don't even have to be pro or anti or, you know, political animals. It's a pretty major event, and it could be the prelude to something much worse. A, most people didn't know what I was talking about. And B, the ones who did, didn't care. And I mean didn't care. Weren't the least bit interested, weren't frightened, weren't particularly on one side or the other. Many of them who have some Christian backgrounds said, oh, that's not a good thing. You know, I hope Israel's okay. But really, it was amazing. We're so news-centric in the West, particularly on the mainland, in America, and certainly in Great Britain and probably France the same. Not so much on the Riviera. I don't think you see that in Italy and Spain and Portugal as much, but you do see it in the more westernized nations. And, you know, the only thing that happened while I was away was a stabbing in Australia, for the most part. The rest of the stories were mild. When I say mild, nothing that could be a prelude to World War III until Iran, Tehran, launched a strike. And the first thing that came to my mind, because now I had to seek someone who did have an interest in this, so I had to call back to the mainland and have a conversation with someone, and I said, a military person, and I said, excuse me, but like, do you get the feeling that this might be a decoy? That somehow Iran and this crappy attack, and look, no attack is irrelevant, but they had to know it was going to be particularly unsuccessful. 99% of the things that were fired from there, and even the things that were fired from some of the proxies, failed. They got shot out of the sky, and they didn't just get shot out of the sky by Bibi Netanyahu's forces. They got shot out of the sky by Americans, by Great Britain, by Saudi Arabia. I mean, come on. But then I kept thinking, that's not what they wanted. That was not the point. If it was a retaliatory strike for the killing of the generals at the embassy in Damascus, it fell flat. Or could it be something else? Now, everybody knows that the reason you may listen to any individual program is because you have some modicum of respect for the host. And your assumption is the host has done as much research as they possibly could. Obviously, no one ever knows the whole story. Or at least I never claim to know the whole story. But we have some sources and we also have a long-term perspective because we've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this for over 33 years now. I have seen acts of war. I have seen the way the radical Islamic fundamentalists have grown bolder in their declaration that they want to wipe out the West. It starts with Israel and America. So I kept thinking, this doesn't seem like they would be satisfied with this attack that fell so far short. So then I started thinking and talking to my two friends who were military. And I said, you launch over 300 rockets and missiles, and you call it a retaliatory strike for killing, I think, ultimately they killed seven IRGC members, but it was only two military commanders, and it was in Syria. And now we're seeing action all around it. Russia sent a supersonic missile warship to the Middle East. Joe Biden has been accused of basically handing Iran a multi-billion dollar lifeline when he opened up all of this money for them. So I said, well, what else could they have been trying to do? How about, A, take all of our attention off the real plan? Because 360 missiles and drones and 99% of them never landing in Israel proper is not the result that would seem to me to be worth the effort. Iran's chief of the general staff, this Mohammed Bagheri, he said the mission was a success. Well, if that was a success, then there must be a longer-term plan. A few of the high-speed ballistic missiles actually did enter Israel, and a 10-year-old child in a Bedouin village got struck by shrapnel. Let me remind you that Bedouins are Arabs, so that wasn't a good outcome. Sayed Mirandi, a professor at the University of Tehran, who is the son of Alireza Mirandi, who happens to be a high-ranking Iranian leader, government leader, who also happens to be a physician. These people all commented and said, we're ready for the next stage of the conflict, and that we could launch an attack 10 times the size of what they did on Saturday. So again, I ask, was this a decoy? Because what they did was they sent a large number of relatively inexpensive and old Iranian drones. This is like garbage pile stuff. And the Israelis, the Americans, the Brits, the French, they went all out. They used expensive modern technology to shoot down these crappy drones. Iran knew those drones were going to get shot down. So I gotta believe, I have to believe that they were decoys. And what they did was they helped us use up a lot of technology, a lot of good technology, expensive modern technology. Now what? Now they can deploy more advanced missiles. Because the few that they did broke right through the shield, the, you know, Iron Dome, Daniel's Sling, all of that stuff was beginning to falter when they sent the last few cruise missiles, which were of higher higher quality than the initial ones. So, yeah, maybe I'm crazy, but if Iran wants to carry out a major strike on Israel, it's going to have to do something 10 times bigger than what we just saw. And that's what I believe they intend to do. They've been preparing themselves for the next stage. They got a lot of underground missile bases. And while all the experts are saying that what I'm telling you right now is garbage and not going to happen, well, not all the experts, but some of them, I have a feeling that when you look at the size and the scale of the attack that we just saw, if they thought that was going to inflict real damage, then they're in worse shape than we thought they were. But if it was an experiment, and if it helped exhaust some of the resources that will be necessary to fight a more substantial attack, then they did win. And that is scary. Now, of course, I'm waiting for Israel to take some action. I know that they're being really hammered. Don't do anything. Don't escalate. We won't help you. Well, Joe Biden can say that all he wants, but Congress isn't going to go along with that. I don't think the American people are going to go along with that. We can't be sending money and weapons to every, you know, foreign war-strewn country and then turn our back on our ally Israel. I just don't see that happen. Not to mention, Iran is on the precipice of having a nuclear weapon. And if Iran gets that nuclear weapon, well, they've now pretty much convinced me they're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. I just, you know, I'm just so tired of having to argue, oh, well, the Palestinian people and Palestine, there is no such thing. Nobody could give you coordinates for a country called Palestine. I've been there, crossed into Gaza years ago. No sign that says, here you are, Border Patrol, now handled by Palestinians. No, no. They don't have a language. They don't have a currency. They're not real. They're just a pawn in this global fight between evil and good, in my opinion. And this isn't about Israel. If you listen to my podcast that dropped today, this isn't about Israel. This isn't about that little swath of land. This is about Iran and its plans. And they may have come after Israel, but they're coming after us. They're coming after the West. And if you think anything else, then keep voting for Democrats because they'll get us there faster. But if you know, I'm probably 85% on the money right now. You'll never vote for a Democrat again because I'm not laughing at Iran. I know some people said, oh, now they look like a laughing stock. All those things got shot out of the sky. No, 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 no. The day before the attack, they were talking to the United States, telling us that the attack was coming. It's almost as if they're working hand in hand with Western nations because Western nations are too stupid to know that they're coming for them. Scary. It's just scary to be alive at this particular moment in history and to have leadership that's so obtuse, so not on top of the situation, if anything, adding to the chaos and the insanity. Don't forget to download the app, the 850 WFTL app, on your phone, on your laptop. I got to hear all the shows and do everything I wanted to because I have that app on my phone. No matter where I am, it's with me. So hopefully you'll download it as well. If not, visit our website, 850WFTL.com, at least once a week so you can participate in all the cool contests. Get yourself some 4-pack of tickets to Sunfest, and who knows what else they're giving away this week. I haven't checked out the website since I got home, but I will after the show. Stay right where you are. Quick break, and I'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Tolls, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So, slightly more ridiculous news, and there's always plenty of that, the jury selection has begun in the, I hate calling it the hush money trial, it's in the ridiculous trial that Alvin Bragg has brought against Donald Trump. And so you've got all these people that have been brought in, like over 100 people have been brought in as prospective jurors, and they're filled up every seat in the gallery. And now they're being, you know, first they were lectured by Judge Merchan, who's a real piece of garbage, talking about, oh, it's so important. You're doing such an important job. And this is a trial by jury. The defendant in this case is Mr. Donald J. Trump. No, the defendant in this case is President Donald J. Trump. We still refer to Bill Clinton as President Clinton. We refer to Bush as President Bush. We refer to Barack Obama as President Obama. They didn't become Mr. Bill Clinton and Mr. Barack Obama. Only in the insanity of a Democrat judge in a Democrat city like New York would you have the audacity to refer to a President of the United States, former or not, as Mr. It's really just... And then the judge has the audacity in giving out the witness, giving out the jury instructions to say, can you be fair and impartial? I wish I had been one of the people called up for that jury so that when that question was asked of me, I could have turned to the judge and said, well, wait a second, judge, can you be impartial? Because you seem to have way more invested in crucifying Donald Trump than anybody I've ever seen before. The exception of maybe Letitia James and any of the other insane DAs that George Soros installed. So there are 100 prospective jurors still waiting to be called. They get paid in New York, though, so nobody minds. Half of them are out of work anyway. And there was a big crowd outside of the courthouse, some pro, some yelling against him. But it's just amazing to look at these people, you know, they sketches that are coming out. They're like just, they want to see Trump. They're craning their heads. You know, this is like if you're a, I don't know, an average Joe, and you can get sat on this jury, the book deals are just waiting for you. Right? Your ability to make the rounds on every talk show host come the end of this trial, get better and better every day, right? So trust me, this is going to be one of the most blatant and egregious examples of two standards of justice that we've ever gotten to watch up close, and that's okay. The judge really was pondering whether or not he would allow Donald Trump to go to Barron's graduation. I'm serious. Because he said, if you don't come to court for every single day of this trial, I will have you arrested. And so the lawyer said, well, look, we intend to be here every day of the trial. However, President Trump's son will be graduating from high school. We would like that day to be made available for him to go to the graduation. He'll think about it, the judge said. Really? You know, the public is going to turn on these people, if it hasn't already. You know, they're talking, oh, they got bomb threats at DA's office, at the New York Library's gotten a bomb threat. So what? This is New York. There's a bomb threat every other week. You got some crazy people wandering around in the streets at all times. The prosecutors asked the judge to fine him $3,000 over social media posts about some of the witnesses in this case. He can't talk. He can't post. He's not. This is going to be overturned so quickly. He'll get convicted. I mean, this is a New York jury, but it'll be overturned. The appeals will be quick and painful for Bragg and all the rest of them. They won't be allowed to play the Access Hollywood tape, by the way. That was determined. And the president, he's looking straight ahead. They said he seems quite calm, looking straight ahead. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's just tragic that my country is being put through this for some petty, vindictive political reason. Then there was a story out there, I don't know if it came out yesterday or this morning, about Alex Jones. Now, look, whatever you may think of Alex Jones, and I have my periods of time where I think that Alex Jones is kind of heroic and then times when I think he's a complete idiot. But he certainly has a point, as he has now said he is going to sue the FBI and the CIA over the allegations that they were targeting him. That there was a report, a secretly shot video tape of conversations with a man called Gavin O'Blenis, who said he was a contracting officer for the CIA. And in the conversations, which were timestamped, they all took place on between March 15th and March 28th, he claimed it was common practice for intelligence agencies to go after figures by allegedly goading them into engaging in incriminating activities. You kind of put anyone in jail if you know what to do, he said. You set them up. You create the situation where they have no choice but to act on their impulse. And once they act on that impulse, some would call that entrapment. I know I would. And he was asked on the tape, is entrapment something that's regularly practiced by the CIA or the FBI? And he said, well, we get really close. We call it a nudge. So apparently they were nudging Alex and all of his staff. And they put out a post here and a post there, a fake profile over here, and anything that might trigger him. And then they just sit back and watch. You know, he said there were times when we would post things and say, oh, this will, you know, the P word, him off. Sometimes you light the fuse and you just wait to see what happens. So when InfoWars was actually brought up by name in the videotape, he said, we were after him, meaning Alex Jones, hardcore. He went on to state that Jones is no longer being targeted because he's broke. He got found guilty and had to pay like $100 million. So now the question is, does this guy actually work for the CIA or the FBI? Because Alex Jones has just hired a whole team of investigators and lawyers, and he's going to sue civil rights violations and racketeering. The government has been racketeering. How about that? Back in October of 2022, he was ordered by a Connecticut jury to pay the family members of the Sandy Hook mass shooting victims and an FBI agent who responded to the school shooting something like $100 million. I think it was $900 and something million dollars for describing the massacre as a hoax. And then he was found liable for defamation after spending years describing the shooting in which 20 fifth graders and six school administrators were killed as a hoax and accusing the victims involved of being actors in staging the deadly tragedy. It was the second multi-million dollar verdict against him, by the way, who was ordered to pay $4 million in compensatory damages and $45 million in punitive damages to another set of parents whose child was killed in the Sandy Hook shooting. Jones said he's going after this guy O'Blenis, going to subpoena him or get him subpoenaed by Congress and see what happens. He's having speculative discussions with a number of lawyers ahead of filing any possible lawsuits. It'll be really interesting to see which lawyers have the guts to take this case, right? Because you'll be very unpopular instantly, not just with the left, but probably in general. So we'll see. Michael Avenatti is available. Oh, no, he's in jail. I don't think he can actually practice from jail. But he could be a pundit on MSNBC, right? All right, let me take a quick break. Stay right where you are because I will be right back. Okay, so the good news is that today your taxes were due. The bad news is that if you're anything like me, you don't trust government to use them appropriately. So you really begrudgingly write that check. You know, I was just saying, I don't file until April 15th. Actually, I filed yesterday because you can do it on e-file. Why should I give them my money any sooner than later? And I actually pay estimated tax all year long and then still inevitably have to cut a check. So trust me, I'm not cutting it in January, February, March. I don't cut it until April 14th. How's that? And I was looking at the difference between Donald Trump money and Joe Biden money. Although Joe Biden is now rich, but I don't think that you would classify him as a typical very wealthy guy. So I'm sure that he will release his tax record like tonight. Although it does bring into mind questions about all these subchapter S corporations that he seems to move money around in. But there's not that much there. On the other hand, Donald Trump's not going to release his tax forms. Not until he has to. And even then, look at what happens. People blame him for being rich. Oh, he got it from his father. Look, I know a lot of people who inherited a lot of money from parents or grandparents and blew it and never had a thing to show for it. They didn't build an empire like Trump did. So when people say that, I just smile and keep it moving. Joe Biden, on the other hand, was a poor guy until his son figured out how to make them all rich, and his brother helped. That should make everybody in this country disgusted. Because that is not what public service is supposed to look like. You don't go into civil service jobs or public service jobs to get rich, but that's exactly what Barack Obama did and what Bill Clinton did and what Joe Biden did. Notice all the names belong to Democrats. George Bush was already rich. So like owned a baseball team, didn't he? Ronald Reagan had plenty of money. It's always these Democrats who come to the White House. We're the men of the people. Yes, we're just like everybody else. See, look at me, I'm poor. And then before you know it, they're multimillionaires, billionaires, with entire empires like the Obamas. That's not what politics was supposed to do. They weren't supposed to make you rich. As a matter of fact, the founding fathers were pretty explicit. They said, look, nobody should be asked to do this forever. You should serve your country and then go back home. Go to your business. Go to your career, your profession. You should be somebody other than a politician. But not anymore. These are professional politicians. That's all they do. The Marco Rubios of the world. They've been in politics since they left law school. They've never signed the front of a paycheck. Never. We sign the front of their paychecks. Donald Trump, at least, signs the front of many, 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 many people's paychecks and always has. On the other hand, Joe Biden, he's been living off my tax dollars for decades. And really, what has he done for this country? And now he's turned his back on Israel. I don't know how that's going to play out, but it certainly wasn't unpredictable, I'll tell you that. Now, Israel could respond any minute now. A lot of people are holding their breath. And the fact that Joe Biden said, we will not participate in it, I don't believe that. I don't think anybody believes that. I certainly don't believe that Iran believes that. The war cabinet in Israel met for hours. And then right after the meeting, everybody was waiting for them to say, well, we're not going to do anything yet. We're carefully pondering our alternatives and blah, blah, blah. No. They came out and said a swift response is important. A response is imminent, were the exact words that one of the Israeli officials said. You don't meet for several hours to say, like, we're going to let this slide. No, you meet for several hours trying to figure out what exactly you're going to be doing. They reportedly discussed diplomatic and military options. And then they said, any response will be coordinated with the Americans. They want to attack Iran. There's no question about it. Now, I don't think they want a full-out war, but they do want a retaliatory strike for what they've done. And I think they are going to do that. And I don't care what Joe Biden says or what Austin, the Secretary of Defense, says or what the Secretary of State says. I don't think anybody really cares what they say. We'll see what happens. Because Benjamin Netanyahu is going to do what he has to do to protect his country. This is their very survival that we're talking about. This is not a political chess match. This is, do we still have an Israel at the end of the month or not? The U.S. State Department spokesperson, this Matt Miller, said that Israel and other nations were effective at neutralizing the threat from Iran over the weekend, adding that the attack could have caused a significant loss of life. So in other words, Blinken and Biden, or Winken, Blinken, and Nod, have consulted with all these other countries and come to the conclusion that we should act as a united front and make sure that Bibi Netanyahu doesn't do anything. Really? I mean, I'm trying to imagine if Mexico launched 350 drones and missiles into Texas and Arizona. Would we care at all what the leader of any other nation had to say about that? No. Our response would be swift and large. Very, very large. And I suspect that's exactly what the war cabinet and Bibi Netanyahu are going to do. They don't care about escalation. And the bottom line is, we got personnel in the region. If there's a war, there are American troops that are going to be there and potentially victims. So anything that Iran does to destabilize the Middle East right now and to violate the sovereignty of Jordan, flying planes over Jordan, over Saudi Arabia, they're begging for a coordinated attack. My only concern is what I opened up the show with. Was this a decoy? Was this just to get the U.S. and Israel and France and the U.K. to expend some valuable resources fighting off these pathetic drone toys? I sure hope not. I sure hope that somebody besides Austin is making the calls, that there's some generals up there that understand that Iran wants to destroy Israel and America. And we cannot allow them to have even the smallest of victories, not even in the public opinion arena, okay? Never mind in the actual arena of military dominance. So it was. I came home to a heck of a lot of news. That's all I can tell you, from tax day to hush money to attacks against Israel. Oh, and by the way, how's the border? Because the numbers are not looking really good in this upcoming election for the Democrats when it comes to the border. See, apparently now every state is a border state. They're complaining in New York. They're complaining in places like New Hampshire because of the influx of illegal immigrants. You can't bring 30 million people into your country and they just disappear. They use up resources. They come into communities. They change and challenge the very fabric of the communities. Trust me, Joe Biden is just trying to figure out how he can close that border and not look ridiculous. And in the prosecutorial news, beyond the hush money trial, they just gave 18 months to Hannah Gutierrez Reed. She was the what do they call them? She handled the guns in that Alex Baldwin Rush movie. There's a name for that, and I just suddenly couldn't come up with it, but she got 18 months, and she was crying. Well, listen, Halyna Hutchins' family's been crying for years now because your involuntary manslaughter, which is what she was charged with and convicted of, cost their mom, their wife, her life. So, you know, you can keep weeping. Here's a tissue. Nobody cares. Don't forget, coming up after me, Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson, the Overnight Guys, and then Jen and Bill be back at 6 a.m. 9 o'clock is Brian Kilmeade. Noon is Dan Bongino. And, of course, I always come back at 3 like a bad penny. But I still have one segment left today, so you just stay right where you are. I'll be right back. My, that's all I can say. You can't make up some of the stuff that's going on in the world today, nor would you want to. I mean, if I could just challenge or change some of this insanity, I would, but you can't. I saw some crazy, I don't know if it was a breaking news story or something like that about this Meghan Markle. I'm so tired of her. And really, she hasn't been getting much attention lately. But they're making a show on Netflix, right? And I don't know. It's her show, but it won't be about her and the Duke in their, you know, beautiful mansion in Montecito. Instead, the series is going to basically be about nothing that anyone's interested in. It's going to be filmed at a property in another neighborhood. They rented a house to do the filming, and it's set to tie in with her new lifestyle brand, American Riviera Orchard. Really? Like, do you want to decorate your house a la Meghan Markle? I don't think so. But we'll find out, right? I'd be more interested in like a Kardashian-style show with the prince and the princess there. But you're not going to get that either. I saw an appearance, on the internet. And it was Harry and Meghan at some kind of charity polo match here in Florida, right? And they were, you know, kissing and hugging and all that cool stuff, holding hands. And very, very lovey-dovey. But there was a lot of, what do they call those guys? Body language experts, right? There were a lot of people online saying, oh, look at that. He's showing power moves. He reaches out and he pulls her in. I mean, come on, guys. Like, do people really care? Is it, you know, do we really think that they're madly in love and that Harry's so affectionate or whatever? Come on. I don't think anybody believes that. I don't think anything they do in public is authentic. How about that? Kissing and hugging and touching and all that other stuff, when you do it in public, I tend to believe that it's fake. But they are producing two new series for Netflix. And one of them will be about polo. Now, aren't you interested in that? Come on. That's something that the average American family is going to sit down and watch a show about polo. Maybe Marco Polo, I'm not sure. But it's a multi-year overall deal. And it's going to celebrate the joys of cooking and gardening and entertaining and friendship. And the other one's going to be all about polo in Wellington, Florida. We have our Christmas party every year at the, like, Polo Place, whatever that's called, the USPA National Polo Center in Wellington. And, okay, I don't really know what polo is. I think it's people riding around on horses with hockey sticks. I'm not really sure. But whatever it is, it's not that interesting to most people. I guess it is interesting to the royals. And so enough people will watch it. Not me, though. My good friend Karen Curtis, who used to be the news director there, now she's somewhere else. She was fascinated by the royals. Me, not so much. The only royal that was fascinating to me was Diana, Princess Diana, and look what happened to her. Anyway, that does it for me. I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, I'm glad I'm back. I will plan on being here tomorrow at 3 o'clock, if it be his will and he delays his coming. In the meantime, remember that what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us, those are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself, because everybody else is taken. And then, as I always say, don't watch too much of the mainstream news, because you will not be getting the true story. Instead, just wait until I come back on at 3 o'clock tomorrow. You can listen to Dan Bongino, too, if you want. In the morning show, you can listen to Jen and Bill. But other than that, turn this raggedy media off, because they're not telling you the truth. And then may God bless you. May God bless Israel. And may God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.